I mean he's an impersonator. A fake.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you the following urgent announcement. You, yes you, put down that oversized bottle of Scrumpy and listen here. Do you like being entertained? Do you like television? Well, do we have the show for you. Built for people who love TV, where three rapscallions dissect two television shows, one old and one not so old, for a probable audience of one. It's time for Hardly TV History.
Hello and thanks for tuning in to Hardly TV History, the show where three idiots talk about two television shows for a probable audience of one. My name is Shannon and as usual, joined here by both Christian and Jake. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, everyone.
Hi.
Now, I know these episodes don't get released, but I know that it will be released.
Yes.
Later.
At some point.
This episode is a bit of an uplift from the last one. We've gone a little bit light and frothy in this one, just to give back to the audience. I think we all need it. We're doing two of the most beloved sitcoms of all time, in both Cheers and Community. The Link, of course, is largely, they all take place in the same location. Cheers sticks a little bit more to that kind of ethos than the Community, particularly in the first episode. But they both largely take place. Cheers in the bar that the show is named after, Cheers, the Cheers Bar, and Community at Greenale Community College, and largely in the study room. But we will dive into that a bit more. But I had such a good time watching these shows, boys. I feel I'm in a good mood now. I'm up and about. All right, let's start with the older show first. We'll throw to Christian to give us the synopsis of Cheers.
Yeah, sure. Cheers is a, how do you describe it? You've done a really good intro, Shannon, and I feel like you've kind of taken the wind out of my sails because you've said the exact same words. Like, it's uplifting, it's fun, there's a great vibe. Cheers revolves around the Cheers Bar, and what we get is the story of a day in the life of the bar and all the comings and goings of the crowd and the people. We open right at the start of the bar's day, so I'm guessing it's sort of, you know, in the afternoon, with a young woman named Diane and her beau wandering in to just stop and have a quick drink while they're on the way to the airport to go fly off and get married. And through the course of the episode, we watch Diane's relationship basically implode as her boyfriend that she was going to run off and elope with, or turns out he decides to go visit his former wife to get back his wedding ring that was his grandmother's antique, and then emerges that his wife turned out to be a very convincing operator, and he decided to go back to her, and he takes her off on a holiday to the Bahamas that he was originally going to take Diane on. And we basically get the story of Diane sitting in a bar watching all the shenanigans of all the weird characters that come in and out, and this bartender played by Ted Danson, who does a magnificent job of, like, nonchalance and coolness. We get to see him, you know, running his bar. Does that kind of...
I think that's wrapped it up nicely.
Yep. You can't say much more than that. Now, I hadn't seen much of Cheers. Now, Cheers is one of those shows that kind of happened at 5:30 on weekdays. Like, as soon as you hear that music, yeah, your dad would probably walk in and sit down and start watching TV. One of those moments, right after Bloody MASH. Now, I never really watched any of it, and I was pleasantly surprised how uplifting this show was. We say uplifting, and it makes you happy. I don't think you could say anything other than it really makes you happy.
It does. Even the intro music is uplifting, and its lyrics are all about the bar, the place where everyone knows your name. You're going to be with friends, and you're hanging out with all your pals down at the pub, which is obviously a very romanticized perspective on the on bar culture, I suppose.
On alcoholism.
Yes.
And alcoholism is a butt of a lot of the jokes here, particularly Norm, who everyone kind of just screams at his name to get his attention because he kind of passed out on the bar. Yeah. And they just make jokes. Oh, Norm, you hear every day. Like, and he, one of Norm's taglines through the episode is, all right, just one more quick drink and then I've definitely got to go. But this is obviously filmed in a time in probably late 1970s. Yeah, really nice.
Yeah, opening. I think if you work back from the very opening, the cold open,
episode 82.
I think if you work back from that joke where the kid that tries to get the fake ID is a soldier from born in 1948 or something like that. So he's you do those quick maths, but you know what is that now? This is sort of edging what 35 years.
Yeah.
38 years, something
getting,
like that.
Getting close to 40, yeah, you're up.
I mean, that's an the fact that all of the jokes land, all of the jokes land now, and I'm like Jake, I've never seen an episode of Cheers, but I could probably tell you enough about it through parody and other things that I've seen that point to it. And I think the second show probably has a huge amount of thanks to Cheers because it moves to that. It's such a... This is kind of an iconic take on these characters, but from that cold open, it told you kind of everything you need to know, particularly about Sam. The character introductions are amazing.
Mm.
I felt nostalgia listening to this theme song of a show that I've never watched.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, I don't know how they did that in such a disarming, you know, I felt like I was amongst friends, which is kind of the series... is what this series is trying to achieve. To do that in the very first episode is something I don't think I've ever really felt before.
No. And I, nostalgia is exactly the right word. You're transported back to the time, like you say, Jake, you when you were a kid and 5:30 rolls around and this music comes in and it's just warmth, and this strong vibe of warmth. The feeling that I had was like my heart was being smothered in honey because it was kind of wholesome and cheesy, but in a really good way. I found the jokes are really well paced through the episode. Every couple of minutes there's a good one. I found myself laughing out loud at a number of them. I think the comedic timing was done really well, and we also get a really good amount of exposition of the world and the characters, like through the bartender, the coach, you know, being easily swayed backwards and forwards. You immediately know this is a guy who just says whatever he needs to say in front of people, but it's kind of funny. Then he gets a headache, so it implies that he's, you know, he's aware of the cognitive dissonance.
You have such a great mix of characters. Like, you don't, no one's the same kind of character, and I think it's led really well by Ted Danson. Like I said, I've never seen it before, and I'm blown away what a great leading man he is. From the very first episode, he really holds it together. That suave, nonchalant, you know, just he owns that bar and he owns that room.
He does a hell of a lot with very few lines.
Yes, that's what I was about to say. He says very little. So much of it is in facial expressions.
Yeah, and what he doesn't say, and the fact that he barely acknowledges some lines. He lets some stuff go through to the keeper, and other times he responds, but it's very short, little one-liners. And he's effortlessly charming, and it needs to be anchored by someone who feels very effortless in their performance. And I think Shelley Long's awesome in that same way, because she's so uptight and wound to play off that really laconic Sam character. And then the rest of the bit players that jump in and out. I love the coach. I thought the coach was just a brilliant character.
It was fun.
But you also for that relationship between, you know, Sam and Diane instantly. Like, as soon as she walks in the bar, that look on his face, as soon as they make eye contact, you think, well, this is going to be a long-term thing. And I know it's a love interest introduced pretty early on, which you hate, Shan, but I just think it was done effortlessly. And I want to say, the I don't normally say about the camera position and camera angles, but whoever was directing this just did it perfectly. The way he shot the bar and the way he shot Ted Danson's reactions, which I know it's a sitcom and it's pretty easy to do, but I reckon it was just perfect in every single way.
I was blown away that none of the jokes fell over. That you're talking about comedy that still lands with an audience nearly 40 years down the track. That there wasn't even a misbeat. Like, there was nothing overly topical. There was nothing that you needed to know anything sort of previously. I appreciated the fact that there was a bit of audience shorthand to tell you that it's in Boston when they're talking about the Patriots. You know, there's little nods in the socks and all that stuff, little nods to let you know where the place is. But they were very kind of broad conversation about football and baseball, so that it didn't age itself in any kind of way. They didn't mention players or anything like that.
What about the gag when they're trying to, the bar's trying to debate what's the sweatiest movie? I really enjoyed that. And But that was also very familiar with me, and I'm sure you guys found the same thing, because we're like, that's the kind of thing you see argued on internet culture, like in internet forums all the time. And when you picture this is happening in 1982, or set in 1982 or the late 1970s or whatever it is, the fact that that is still topical and hits like that for us, it's a real testament to the quality of the writing of the show.
And I must admit, I immediately went with Rocky too, is the very first thing I thought. As soon as they said it, I was like, it's probably Rocky.
Yeah.
And then someone said Alien, and I'm like, wait, is it?
Yeah, it could be.
Trying to think back to Alien. Is Alien particularly sweaty?
I think under their helmets, yeah, probably.
No, Alien, that's Alien 2, or Aliens. Yeah, aliens. Alien is what he said.
Well, yeah, well, I don't think Alien 2 had been released yet.
No, no, it hadn't. But I could certainly see Alien being the sweatiest movie, because, I mean, it was pretty tense.
Yeah,
and it's just so simple that the guy walks in and gives him the answer, and everyone agrees. It's just something. Just the writing is perfect. It's just the perfect writing class.
Yes, but that answer came from the boyfriend, Diane's boyfriend, who was basically in the process of dumping her and going back to his wife.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that storyline was a little weak. But the funny thing is, I could actually see someone being that kind of enraptured, and she's so enraptured with intelligence and kind of power and the power imbalance that we would now recognize that he is a professor dating a student effectively and ought not to be, but that was kind of permissible, you know, 40 years ago, that power imbalance. And she's so enraptured with that. And you can tell as soon as he said, I'm going to go back and see if I can rescue the ring, you just know.
Yeah, he's not coming back.
Sitcom shorthand is he's not coming back, or he's running away with her.
Yeah.
And I think the funny thing is that Sam sees that too straight away, and he knows what's happening, but he's just humouring her effectively to get through. I do love the choice of his name too. It's like Sumner.
Sumner Sloan.
Sumner. Like, it's just such a rich guy name.
Yeah, it's a bit toffee.
Well, I also like the joke where he says, you know, I could offer you a job here, and she just bursts out laughing. He knows she's got nothing else to go to. He's worked her out well in advance, and she's slowly catching on that he's, you know, he's smarter than he looks, I think. And just, I think every character is damn near perfectly cast and perfectly played. Like, I haven't seen many more episodes, but yeah, I'm blown away by how everyone just kind of fits in effortlessly, as Shannon normally says.
Yeah. Now, what about the exposition we get of Ted Danson and Sam's character? His backstory, who was basically a pro athlete, and we get told that by the coach talking up, saying how great he is, and then it turns out he's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. He bought a bar when he was an alcoholic, and he still stuck there.
But he's embraced it. He's embraced what his past was, and he's kind of, I feel like he's learnt from that, and he hasn't had a drink for 3 years, so it's kind of his lucky mistake.
There's a lot to be learned from that. I mean, first of all, the willpower of someone to be an alcoholic, to be around alcohol day in, day out. In fact, it's your livelihood, but not to drink it when you were a functioning alcoholic or an alcoholic that actually cost you your career. Because that's the reason he didn't go further in his career, is because he was an alcoholic. So that says when he switches his mind to something, he can effectively achieve it. And I think that probably becomes more relevant as that love story, that romance progresses, because I think, you know, it's the original Sam and Diane is kind of the, you know, where we point to for the will they, won't they relationship. And he's clearly going to be pursuing her, and she's not going to be interested for a long time. So that willpower is already present in the first kind of beats of the character. It's incredibly smart to have other characters talk his prowess up rather than him kind of be it's incredibly nuanced, his character, in how it's presented, because he could be this kind of Lothario. I think about someone like Joey from Friends. I think his introduction is really like, I'm just a stud and everyone knows that I'm a stud. The way that it's introduced for Ted Danson is that it's not done by him. So it's not him bragging or anything like that. He makes a couple of jokes at that expense, but it's everyone else is kind of talking him up.
Yep.
And I think that that's a really smart way of getting us to really like the character without him being a douchebag. He's just incredibly suave and witty, and has no need to tell everyone how suave and witty he is. And I think that's where some lesser comedies get stuck. And I think it's very similar to the show we're about to discuss, is it's, you know, there's a little bit more of, you know, he's just introduced as a good, clean, kind of character that clearly has a prowess with women and a sporting prowess as well. And I just really love the way that character was introduced.
The other thing he has is what I think of as basically conversational judo. You know, I'm thinking of the scene where the waitress comes in. So not Diane, because she hasn't become a waitress yet, but the other one storms in, you know, she's a couple of minutes late and she goes, I know I'm late. And she goes and talks about all the things she's got going on in her life and she's too busy and Sam can't deal with it. He just needs to, you know, just needs to get over it, yada, yada, yada. And she storms out the back and then Sam hasn't said a word at all. He just leans over to the coach and he says, do you think I was hard enough on her? You know, and that kind of like witticism and the way that's written is actually really good because they really cleverly put Sam into a position where he only says one line, but using that one line, he actually portrays intelligence, class, wit, and great comedic timing, obviously. But I think that's part of the trick in the writing of the character.
It's shorthand, right? Like it feels like a family. Each character feels lived in. It feels like we've dropped into to a moment in time. Mm-hmm. Like this relationship, all these relationships have been building and we're just jumping in at a random part, much like the Diane character is. She's experiencing these people for the first time like we are as an audience.
Yeah.
And so you get that warmth really quickly established that there's a heap of warmth and love and reverence for each other.
And that's really interesting. And that sort of goes back to what we were talking about with it feeling very wholesome and warm when you watch the show. It actually made me sort of sit back and think, you know, people hanging out in bars like that isn't really such a thing these days, or at least in my experience, in my life. And maybe wonder, have we as a society or as a culture, have we missed something? But of course, you know, we're seeing a very romanticized view of these people's worlds and their lives in the bar, and it's all, you know, rose tinted glasses. Because on the other end of the transaction, when you know we're all laughing at Norm passing out asleep on a bar stool, and he goes to the pub every night and basically drinks himself stupid. On the other end of that life is presumably Norm's wife and family who aren't seeing him at all. And the only time they see him is when he rolls in completely wasted at the end of every night. Then he passes out, you know.
And the coach directly asks him that and says, you know, doesn't your wife care or wonder where you are? And he says, oh, she wonders where I am. She just doesn't care.
Such a 70s, 80s joke, you know, just the wife doesn't care where they are.
Yeah, it is such an old line. It's like 80s comedians were all like, my wife hates me and I hate her. And it's this kind of, that kind of joke. And I think, funnily enough, we see an ex-wife character. We don't see her, but she's actually the subject of affection of her ex-husband.
Mm.
So you do get the opposite where you find a man going back to his wife. He just can't give her up. That phone conversation that he has with his ex-wife at the bar.
The depths of her knowledge. Or
depth of there's something, the depths, either depths of you or whatever he says, made me laugh so hard because it was just such a weird line to say back. A college professor thinking he's so much smarter than everyone else. It's that kind of line.
Yeah,
your depth amazes me or whatever he says. It's just gold.
But there's an interesting contrast or juxtaposition there, isn't it? Like there's Norm's wife who he claims hates him and couldn't care that he's out at the bar drinking himself to death every night. And so, you know, and then we've got on the other side this Sumner's wife who's actually the completely dominant one in the relationship. You know, she can basically make him do whatever she wants, whenever she wants. So there's a bit of a interesting contrast there into how these off-screen wives are actually portrayed.
I just props to John Ratzenberger, who you just immediately know the voice of for every Pixar fan. He's the Pixar Lucky Charm, who's in every Pixar movie.
Yes,
he's there as Cliff Clavin, I think the mailman, Rhea Perlman. There's just so many just good, solid character actors in here that do just give you that vibe of warmth and love and a family. And I, like I said, hadn't actually ever seen an episode of Cheers, had seen a lot of Frasier, and I assumed it was kind of along the same vein, which I didn't necessarily like Frasier. You know, there was a period of time where I watched it and thought it was fine, and now I wouldn't watch another episode. But this is far more wholesome and sweet and... you know, lovely than Frasier, and a really different tone and vibe.
The jokes are fairly innocent. I mean, when it comes down to it, I mean, obviously there's some major themes of alcoholism and, you know, and people not being great husbands and wives, but the jokes are fairly, you know, if they're 5:30 on a weekday,
they're safe, right?
They're safe. Yeah, safe. That's probably a better word.
They're safe, but witty. And I think he's incredibly witty. Sam is particularly, you know, she shows that she's as witty as him. Like the couple of lines that she gets away is quite good as well in Diane. So, everyone gets their moment to shine and be and get a laugh there too. Like everyone actually gets a little bit of a moment, a good quick little line, or the character beats are really easy to follow. And that shorthand for the audience is all established. Like you get a really good picture of every single character from the first episode in 22 minutes is a phenomenal effort to get all that across.
I also think there's some really clever things that I noticed early on was like, you know, when kind of he sends Coach home with Norm, and then a whole bunch of people come through the door, and you know, he checks his watch to see what time it is, to see how close they are to closing time. I just think there's some really just clever things done here that I just was really subtle, just what normal human beings would do in a romanticized bar.
It feel very lived in.
Attention to detail was really high in the pilot. I don't think I've ever seen that much care given to characters and location and air. I mean, the bar's such a big character in itself, but I just thought there's just so many little subtle things that they do. Like everyone has a napkin, you know. Mm-hmm. He checks his watch all the time, you know. The alcohol seems to be, you know, readily available, and he's mixing drinks while you're watching him. It just felt lived in, and it felt real.
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity there. So I've known Cheers as a reference, and I think I've seen like bits and pieces of it, like you had, Jake, but I've never actually sat down and watched a full episode before. If you use the bar as a character, there's all sorts of opportunity to actually grab props from episodes and actually install them in the bar, and potentially like that actually helps flesh out the world. And I'm actually interested to see, you know, if you watch more episodes, if that sort of thing happens.
Plus, a bar gives you opportunity for having new customers that actually spend time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a convenience store where you've got to have a character only comes in for 2 minutes. Otherwise, it's weird that they were around the whole time. Whereas a bar, you can have the regulars, and you can also just have random characters that come in,
guest stars,
and do a joke and then piss off. Like you don't actually need to have the ongoing kind of you know, character in there apart from your normal barflies. And I mean, you know, I'm looking at the references that I remember, like the Simpsons. You know, the Moe's Bar is clearly and actually unambiguously in parts referencing Cheers. The Flaming Moe's song is a direct ripoff of that, and that's clearly Cheers. And maybe that's why the reverence for me is immediate, because of, you know, my love for those particular early episodes of The Simpsons. But it's referenced everywhere, and you can see why. Like, it's just such a clean, easy show to reference, and visual shorthand as parody is really super easy, because of just it's one location. Like, as soon as you see that bar, you kind of know it's the Cheers bar. And in fact, I've been to that bar. I've been to Boston and actually walked in that bar, and it obviously someone built it on spec after the show. But it's quintessentially, you know, Boston in that location. You see a lot of those types of buildings where you just walk around a little narrow passageway to get into the bar. So it's a lovely little place.
Point of order. If you'd never seen an episode of Cheers before, and I know you've been to the States some time ago, why did you wind up in the Cheers bar?
You know, you're walking past and they go, it says Cheers bar. And I go, I know TV. I'm going to walk in the Cheers. I mean, it's so weird, Christian, because it's a show that I've never seen a full episode of, but I could have told you that it stars Sam and Diane, and that there's a barfly named Norm who everyone yells and Norm when he comes. Like, I don't know where that knowledge comes from.
But you also know the general layout of the bar. Like, you know in your head without even watching it, I know what the Cheers bar looks like. And I've seen enough of Cheers to know what the bar looks like.
I could have probably sung you the theme song without actually ever seeing an episode. So it's one of those things that I don't even know where that knowledge all comes from. Simpsons definitely references it more than once. And it actually, you see an episode or part of an episode.
You do.
That they're watching with Ted Danson doing the voice. And interestingly, Woody Harrelson is in that episode. So that must be a later season of Cheers.
Yeah, season 3, I believe.
Yeah. Right. So Yeah, it just is within me that I know this stuff without ever actually seeing an episode.
Yeah, along with The Simpsons, my mind immediately goes to Scrubs. There's an episode, I think, in the first season where they actually end up treating one of the writers who was on, one of the guys who wrote for Cheers.
Yes.
And JD and Turk are very excited and start doing, you know, parroting all the lines back to the guy. And
yeah.
But I think you're right. Cheers has obviously embedded itself into our pop culture in a really almost insidious way. Like it permeates across our cultural awareness.
Yeah, and it's in the zeitgeist, and there'd be people who would know the Simpsons reference without ever knowing what it actually was.
Yeah, for
sure. And then if you showed them this episode, they'd go, "Oh, that's what that meant."
Mm.
I'm sure that happens, but you know, we'll talk about the next show.
Mm.
But it's going to be a hard one to split, I tell you. Jake, you're doing Community. Let's give the breakdown.
Now, level-headed son Michael Bluth takes over his family affairs. No, that's the wrong show. No, I actually watched the right show this time. That's a callback to another episode that we haven't, I don't think, dropped.
It hasn't released yet.
I don't think either. No, we're thrown to Greendale Community College for their they've been there for a little while, a couple of days, I'm guessing. Suspended lawyer Jeffrey Winger is forming a study group to try and hit on his new love interest Britta, best name ever, to try and get into her pants, and he unwillingly or unknowingly forms the most epic study group of all time with a mixture of characters, and their whole first thing is him just trying to cause chaos, get into Britta's pants, and get the test answers from his old client, I want to say.
Yes, his old client.
Yep. His old client. And then all of a sudden he's locked in a study group for the rest of his live long days.
Yep, he kind of accidentally found himself put together a study group he wasn't really intending to do. He was trying to bluff his way into Britta's affections. Mm-hmm. And I also want to sort of point out that his former client is played by John Oliver. Which
yes.
I had a good chuckle at.
As if you need another reason to love this show, John Oliver's in it, man. You know, I'm going to be quiet because I'm just going to let you guys talk.
You want to talk about leading men. Like, Joel McHale is perfect for this role. The condescending, slimy ex-lawyer who thinks he's better than everyone else at community college, while he's forced to go there, to get his credits to become a lawyer again, and just thinking he's above everyone else, he's perfect for the role.
Yeah, I also found the other characters are all very unique. I mean, we're immediately introduced to Chevy Chase's character, whose name escapes me right now.
Pierce,
that's right. Yes, Pierce. He's I suppose the meme of what a mature age student is supposed to be in tertiary education. Can't stop talking, and he introduces himself as a highly valued dinner guest.
Yeah.
One of the person who invented the Hawthorne wipes.
Yeah, he's from a wipes dynasty.
He's from a wipes dynasty, which is where you want to come from, really.
That's right. He's obviously a titan of business.
Yeah. I will say the rest of the characters are fairly stereotypical in some regard. You know, the single mother, Shirley, ex jock, Troy.
Yep.
You got Annie by Alison Brie, who, you know, is the ex teacher's pet who had a mental breakdown. The one character you can't really define is Abed.
I think he defines himself as when he's talking about what Britta, how Britta describes him, is that she has a cousin with a condition that he should look up. So it's heavily alluded that Abed had some sort of Asperger's, is on the spectrum in some way.
Well, very much so. But Abed is really interesting because he's basically this super condensed pop culture reference machine.
Like a Wikipedia.
It's even more condensed than Wikipedia, because I've seen some pretty rambly Wikipedia articles, man, but he's something else.
Well, maybe an IMDb.
He's your audience into everything pop culture. So he's the way you can get any reference you want through Abed, and in fact spends a lot of this episode talking about how this study group reminds him of Breakfast Club. So it's a very easy way, and Abed becomes more and more self-referential and meta as the show wears out. Anyone who's ever listened to any of the podcasts will know that I absolutely adore Community. And so we should probably point out right now that it was created, and this might cause Christian some pain, but it was created by Dan Harmon, much better known at this stage for creating Rick and Morty.
This is all making sense. It's falling into place.
And so Jake is quite right. The characters do feel very two-dimensional, I think, in a lot of ways. But I think that's by design to get you to hook in to the ethos of the show, and then you can expand on them. They don't feel particularly fleshed out, particularly, I'd say, Troy Alison Brie's character, Annie, they don't feel particularly well fleshed out. Even Shirley, I think, to that point. And they're probably the characters, particularly Annie and Troy, that changed significantly post the pilot. But Troy's an odd character. He's the one that stands out immediately, particularly when you know the show as well as I do. Him in the pilot is just a very strange, sort of overly aggressive man-child sports person, which doesn't kind of make a lot of sense. And he's kind of almost accidentally racist. He calls Abed Slumdog Millionaire, which just seems sort of overtly racist for no reason. So, you know, as I said, anyone who actually knows the show's Troy and Abed become the best of friends, and that kind of carries the entire series through, you know, their relationship. So it's a weird entry for him as a character beat. Pierce being kind of overtly sexual towards everyone in the group, but mostly Shirley, also carries through the entire series. And Britt is really strong in this, you know, watching this again disappoints me in how much she changes through the show, because she's quite a strong character in this. And she's the only one in the whole group that sees through Jeff's bullshit straight away. Like, you know, Jeff's epic speech about you get very quickly that Jeff can talk his way out of any situation.
He says it himself. He says, if I talk long enough, I can make people change their mind. I'm either a god or truth is relative. I love that line. That is a great line.
You forgot the booyah. Yeah. And that whole scene with Professor Duncan, with John Oliver standing on the sports field, in anything with John Oliver's character is just brilliant. Yep. Professor Duncan and Jeff together, their dynamic is hilarious. Conversation about, you know, you can't talk to me like that. Yes, I can, because you're a 6-year-old girl. You know, and he says, no, that would be hilarious. And he says, no, it's because you're a 5-year-old girl and there's a pecking order. That little exchange is kind of the entire, is Jeff's whole thing. Like, he can keep talking, he can be aggressive, or he can be sweet. It's all geared towards getting other people to do what he wants them to do. And you see that in different dynamics. Like, he plays different people off different. He's just an absolute, what you think of as a smarmy bullshit lawyer. He is that to a T.
Well, he's a bullshit artist.
Absolutely is. With a kind of vague working knowledge of the law. That's about it. You know, and he managed to get himself through.
My favourite line with John Oliver's character, the Professor Duncan, was when he's talking about the hallowed halls of the institution, then he bangs on a window because there's a guy urinating outside his window.
not a bathroom.
Yeah. You know, and this is clearly, I mean, I do really want to question how, you know, institutions over there work. Can you really go to a community college and get a law degree? Because if so, sign me up.
Well, he probably's done enough to like, you know, he's missing a few units or something along those lines.
But I don't think any of our TAFEs would offer any kind of legal enough to get you a law degree back, surely.
No.
He did say he's got his law degree from Columbia now he's got to get one from America. So that's also another great line.
But I want to point out the start of the episode with Jim Rash as Dean Pelton. Like, I know he gets a very small part, but he is one of the best characters. And I think it's a great intro that introduces kind of your core character without actually saying anything. Just that quick snapshot of them, you know, your past, your prime, or something along those lines of for more educational single parents, and it zooms in on Shirley. It's a perfect introduction of what everyone's going through without actually saying anything. And then to cut the speech short, It's just brilliant writing. I don't think you can say much more about how smart the writing is on this first episode.
Yeah, look, my criticism of it, though, and I'm going to bring things down a notch, guys. Sorry, I can tell you're absolute fans and you're very keen to sing its praises, is that it is just so heavily reliant on pop culture references that if you don't have those, do you reckon the humor lands as well?
It doesn't land anywhere near as well.
Yeah.
But I think that there's enough. I think there's enough in it that doesn't necessarily worry it, and I think that's where Abed actually performs that role, that he explains it for people that aren't necessarily he's the conduit in between, because you know as it wears on, and again we do try very hard to talk about the pilot in its succinctness, but as it moves on, I think that they go really heavily into parody, and that has the ability to lose people entirely. And this episode is kind of a Breakfast Club. It's kind of doing Breakfast Club. It's the first kind of parody that you see, but it's very shorthand, you know, for the Breakfast Club. And all you really need to know about the Breakfast Club is it's a bunch of people stuck at a school. That's kind of it. You don't need to know, you know, Abed does a speech by one of the Breakfast Club people.
But they immediately say that's from Breakfast Club, and then he goes,
yeah. And then he says, Dirty. And then he just does another movie altogether, and he's just like Dirty Dancing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you're right. I think that's unapologetic in its use of pop culture.
It is completely unapologetic, but what I'm questioning is if you don't have those pop culture references and you need Abed there to explain them to you, you're probably not going to find it that funny.
Yeah. Mm. I don't think it ages it though, because they're pretty popular pop culture references. Like they're pretty on the nose what they are. The only thing I will say, it does age when they say he's playing Bejeweled on his phone.
Yeah.
I think anytime they whip a phone out, it's age, because they're all using Blackberries and old flip phones.
Yeah,
like, let's get any idea what the hell they are.
As soon as you say Bejeweled, I think you'd lost, you know.
If they said Candy Crush, it would have
aged. Oh, yeah, you'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, Candy Crush.
Actually, that's a really interesting observation there, because let's talk about that and then compare that with Cheers, because we're laughing at the Blackberries and the old phones. That's not something you'd worry about in Cheers.
No.
In Cheers, they actually pull out the old rotary phones and he hands it over the bar.
Maybe the production of a rotary phone. I think there'd be a whole bunch of kids going, sorry, what's that? What does that do?
Yeah, but you kind of know.
You know it's a phone. That
it, you know it's a phone. And you know it's set, you know, if we're watching it now, it's set in the past. Mm. Where Community, you feel like it could be happening right now, but the technology instantly dates it. Mm. And I guess if you had a phone in Cheers, you know, a smartphone, you'd text your wife and be like, on my way home now.
Isn't it funny that there's been shows like that? Friends, which I see as a modern show, a lot of that stuff is solved by a cell phone, right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
sure.
You've either got to write your way around the use of technology for those old tropes, or anytime you display it, you're like, what is that? What year is this? So.
Yep, but there's great jokes in Cheers. I know we're talking about Community, but just bear with me a minute. There's great jokes in Cheers, like when the phone rings and the waitress calls out, "Who's not here?" and the entire bar throws their hands up.
That's a great joke.
Yeah,
that's a great joke.
You can't pull that off anymore, and you certainly couldn't pull it off in Community.
You are absolutely right, though. Cheers is timeless. There is not a joke that doesn't land because we've moved on from that era. Mm. Even the stuff about ringing the bars probably wouldn't even have a phone you could pick up. Like it just would just not happen anymore. You book on an app. You can't even talk to a waitress half the time anymore. You walk in and it's like scan that QR code and
order your food that way. Yeah.
You know, so it's changing, but you instantly there's a warmth about it because it does feel like it's an old, a different time. Community. I look, as someone who has been to the Australian equivalent of a community college, this show, I get this show straight away. Like, I get that study room. I get being in a bunch of class with people that you don't necessarily like, but you're lumped together because you're trying to achieve a common goal, and you stop being a study group and end up being friends. And that's, you know, it really does hit me there. Like that's what happened to me at TAFE.
Well, don't go to university, mate, because the study groups do not work out that way. You get a study group, no one turns up. If maybe you and one other person, and then like. People ghost you on the work. It's awful. There's no fun. There's certainly no Abed there.
We used to play ping pong. Like I was effectively Abed. Yeah. I'm sure of it.
My very short tenure at university was not that. It was you meet up in your class, you go home, and then all of a sudden you got a paper due.
That's all
I remember about university.
See, this TAFE really does feel like this. Like I have a great reverence for this group of kind of, we know we're not quite talented enough to be in university. and we're, you know, but we're here and we're doing our best, guys. You know, like it, I loved my time at TAFE, and I only spent sort of, you know, 10 months there, but I loved it. I do really feel a warmth for this, and you do genuinely have people that are different ages that are coming through, mm-hmm. you know, that are back, you know, back studying just because they can, or because they're trying to, you know, get a better job or whatever, and they're single mums or the what have you. So, you know, there is a warmth about it, and the place is kind of falling down a bit. But you know, I think this show does a phenomenal job at introducing most of the characters. They're far more flawed, I think, but so are the Cheers characters, and they're unabashedly flawed too in Cheers. Like, Jeff is clearly a flawed character. Mm-hmm. Sam is clearly a flawed character in the fact that he was an alcoholic.
Yep.
You know, every single one of those characters has something that we can immediately point to and go, that's a flaw. And that's what makes them feel more rounded, is that they're both positive and negative.
You know, Shannon made a very good point about, you know, having it in a bar means you can rotate people pretty freely and have mm-hmm. people come in. You can do the same thing in the community college. Because there's short courses available and there's short access available, you have that opportunity to rotate through your classes each season. You can have one person be there for a whole season doing one class and then bugger off again. We see, you know, we haven't seen him yet, but one of the best characters in the whole show is a teacher there. And you have that ability, like Cheers, to kind of rotate your people as guest stars up the wazoo. Yeah, it's a really smart location to place it, I think.
Timelessness, I think, is an interesting one. And I think that what we're seeing is an evolution of comedy. You know, and I think comedy now is pop culture references really heavily. We've seen whole shows built on that. I'm thinking of something like The Big Bang Theory. Just seems to be an ever-ending parade of pop culture.
And Rick and Morty.
And Rick and Morty absolutely is unashamedly mm-hmm. has pop culture references through it.
Yep.
Whether that means that they won't be timeless in the same way that something like Cheers is yet to be seen. Are we still going to be talking about those shows in 30 years like we are now? Hopefully not still doing this show, guys. But if we are, you know.
Back in my day.
but you're right. I mean, does the community pilot stack up 40 years later? I don't know. Maybe not. Does anyone remember The Breakfast Club? Who the hell knows? I mean, but
it's true.
Cheers manages to make that happen. And I think you could show Cheers in another 20 years and you'll still get laughs out of it.
I think that's absolutely true. And the people are going to laugh at it just because of the quality of the show, the way it's put together, the quality of its acting. I'm sort of leaning on the fence of I don't think Community will be held in the same regard.
But there's always some sort of relatability joke there that you can partially identify with and understand where they're coming from. You can always make that connection in Cheers. There's always something that will make you laugh about going home to your missus when you're drunk. Like, even that's funny, even though it's 40 years later. It's always mm-hmm. going to be funny. And there's some things in Community that just won't always land. And Christian was very right that if you're not into those pop culture references, you're not going to have the same time that we have with it, because that's what we do. So it depends on your audience.
Well, what happens when pop culture moves on?
Exactly.
Well, I think you get friends, right? Like, if you're in the right time period that you understand and know those things, even in a passing reference, you're going to make it. It's going to work for you.
Yep.
Most of that comedy is kind of based on interrelationships, and there is a lot of pop culture kind of shorthand, but a lot of it is kind of interconnected thing. I mean, I think it's completely unfair to say that Community doesn't work because of the pop culture references, or it won't work. I think most of it is about interrelationships, but there's certainly a lot of that stuff that you've got to be across. And there's even stuff that I've looked up because not understanding it, you know, watching those shows. I think it's an evolution of comedy, and I think it's probably evolution the wrong way. And I think you see what happens when they divest heavily into pop culture references is a show that I absolutely hate. But a lot of the historical shows that we've looked at didn't do that. I'm thinking about Police Squad, there's not a single pop culture reference in there. Like, it's just, it's sight gags and it's timeless comedy. Evolution of comedy has moved to referencing pop culture.
And I wonder if part of the problem, not that it's a problem, because we're in a golden age of TV, and I want to be very clear about that. Like, I truly believe that we're living in a time when the best television, you know, that we've ever seen is being made. But I wonder if part of the problem is just the volume. You know, shows like Police Squad and Cheers, the industry was a lot smaller, and you probably had the best of the best riding on a few shows and directing a few shows and whatnot. Whereas right now, the volume is just so much bigger. Maybe it's not getting quite the same quality of show.
Well, you got to look at what stands out now. What are the big shows that have lasted in the last 10 years? I'm looking at things like, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Office. What makes them different? And Community should be in that conversation, I believe, because it was amazing. And I'm going to speak going forward, but it's unique. There's some unique things about Community that no other show does. And that's where shows like Big Bang Theory fall down, because it's not unique.
Let's also not romanticize it too, because it nearly got cancelled just about every series it did.
Yeah.
So, you know, and season four, and that's a whole other podcast almost, season four and how we got to season four altogether. But, you know, Dan Harmon gets replaced in season four after a falling out with Chevy Chase, and they bring in new writers, and the show is immediately different from the original show. And when it's renewed in season five and Dan Harmon comes back, they refer to that year as the gas leak year. So they just pretend that it didn't happen, you know? So it's just basically like, that didn't happen, we're moving on. It then ends season five and is cancelled by NBC.
Yeah.
It then moves to Yahoo. Yahoo had a streaming platform for all of about 3.5 minutes, they've effectively tanked Yahoo, or they've taken credit for tanking Yahoo. And so it cancels at the end of season six. It's so much so that the fan base, it becomes a catch crisis. Arbed says somewhere in the series, six seasons in a movie, and that becomes the catch cry. They made it to six seasons, and now they're still talking about the movie. But it never quite got the fan base that it deserved when it was being shown on TV. Mm-hmm. But it's got a cult following, and it's the rewatchability of a show like this is that the jokes are layered, and there's jokes that take three seasons to pay off, and it's built for streaming. This show, before streaming was really a thing, like it's built for repeat viewing.
Yeah, it's very bingeable.
Good observation.
Cheers isn't. Cheers you can chuck on at any stage, at any season, and drop an episode and go, I feel great and warm and happy. At least that's my impression from this season.
Yep.
This show is built for rewatching and to build a cult. I don't think anyone could say that they're a cult Cheers. There might be fans who've, you know, recreated the bar in their basement or whatever, but it's a show that's kind of universally loved, whereas I think Community is a hate it or love it kind of deal, and the ones that love it will fervently love it. And we'll be right into the theory and the, you know, and get deeper and deeper in it. Whereas I just think Cheers is just kind of universally beloved. Have you ever met anyone who's like, that Cheers, don't like it? Like, it's one of those shows.
I just don't see how you could not like a show like Cheers.
But I think the reason
Are you a monster?
The reason is because what Christian talked about is that, and what we're talking about is that the broadness now, or the ability to get shows, is that the audience is absolutely fractured. You know, Cheers, it was one of three network television shows that you had sort of four choices to watch.
Yep.
And you were watching Cheers, or you were watching, you know, there was a limited run, and it was all eyeballs on the TV. Now, diversification of media means that there's so many writers doing so many divergent things that you can get super excited about one thing. So when we get weird shows like Game of Thrones or The Squid Game or something like that, where suddenly everyone's watching one show, that's a weird thing. That doesn't happen anymore. It absolutely happened 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just think that this is the evolution of comedy and the diversification of media, and it means you can pick and choose. I watch an episode, I don't like this. This is what this show is designed to do, people. This is why we're here. We're giving you an in. We're saying that this is a show you should continue with or not. So let's get to that point before get off my soapbox. Okay. Just give me 1 second.
But
calm down.
In saying that, if you look at the pilots alone, not what you know about the rest of the season, which show do you continue to watch based on all the positive things we've basically said about both shows?
Well, do you want me to go first?
Go for it.
Sure.
Cheers. I found every part of that show entertaining. All the jokes I laughed at. I didn't find anything, you know, unconscionable or immoral or whatnot. Whereas Community felt like it was obviously a pop culture reference machine. And I've just felt like you could get Cheers without Community, but you definitely won't get Community without shows like Cheers in the forerun.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Modern comedy has a lot to pay for.
Just go back to the OG source and check out what started the zeitgeist, what started that pop culture reference.
Michelle, I think we know where you're landing. You can go next.
Look, I think you're wrong, because I think Cheers is the better the better pilot, because it's like a big warm hug. Mm-hmm. Should I think you should go and watch Community is the answer. Oh. But what is the better pilot? Frankly, if you're a bit like me and haven't seen Cheers, go watch Cheers. For God's sakes, go and watch the first episode of Cheers, because you will see where basically modern sitcom has come from.
Mm.
But if you want to binge watch a show, to me, it's Community every day of the week. But that's not the question you ask. So no, I'm picking Cheers.
Now, I'm going to go Cheers as well. There's universities now that show Cheers as how to write pilots or how to write TV shows. And there's a reason for that. It's the first show that I've watched for probably 10, 15 episodes of this show that I wanted to watch more instantly. And I did. I didn't even look at, I looked at Community and went, I've got 20 minutes. Let's watch another Cheers, because I was just so, it's a happy place. It is a happy place to be. I kind of agree with Shannon. If you want to binge watch a show, watch Community, because it is brilliant. But if you're going on pilots, I don't think you can pass up Cheers.
Are we saying that we all want to go to a place where everyone knows your name?
Yes.
That's all please. I want to go.
And I want to watch more. I actually want to finish the episode so I can watch more Cheers. That's how much I want to watch the show.
I'm becoming an alcoholic based purely on that show alone. Yeah, it is one of those shows that if you haven't seen it, it needs to go into the annals of being like an absolute classic show.
Yeah.
And absolutely worth checking out.
I guarantee I'll finish the whole season. I'll watch the whole run.
And just on that one, interesting thought there, boys. Like, obviously, you guys are bigger fans of Community than I am, and that's fine. Do you reckon that people who have gone and binge watched Community and love all these pop culture references and enjoy the meta-ness that Abed gets and whatnot, are they going to enjoy Cheers?
I think they'd be mad not to. Surely. You know, I think, you know, it's distilled down. It's the purest of sitcoms.
That's right. It's distilled and condensed. It's the thing that you, yep.
This is the 2000s answer to Cheers. It's basically what Cheers is, but you've brought it into the modern world.
It becomes something very different. It must be said, like this show does evolve. Community evolves over time. What we see from Cheers right now will pretty much get us all the way through to the last episode. Like, you're not going to get anything different.
And
from
I think
pilot.
That's okay.
That's absolutely fine. I'm not saying the show needs to evolve.
No.
By necessity, the characters become more, more complex and more fleshed out, because you don't sit with those characters for God knows how many episodes Cheers ran for,
yep.
And not get more character development. But Community, the show completely evolves to almost complete pop culture parody, and it picks up each episode is kind of different thematically and gets really meta. And as someone who eats that shit up, that's why it's right in my wheelhouse. But Cheers is the purest of kind of sitcom. If aliens came down and said, tell me what a sitcom is, you would go straight for Cheers.
That's right? True. Yeah.
Like, that's the show you would go, that's what human comedy is. That's what.
Yeah. Maybe what I'm thinking of is Community and modern comedy and shows like it. Their takes on or their reflections of, you know, things like Cheers, which are the original, the OG, the source.
Can I ask a question? Did you actually like Community?
Not particularly, no.
Not particularly. Okay, you hadn't answered the question. Have you actually said if you liked it or not?
Look, I watched it and had a couple of laughs, but like, would I go and keep watching it? No.
You know, but Cheers landed at an interesting time. I think you see shows now with flawed characters up front. I'm thinking of Roseanne was quite successful around that time, maybe a little bit later. Married with Children, deeply absolutely unlikable people. This is not, you know, I'm thinking of like Leave It to Beaver or whatever, those really wholesome Brady Bunch-esque kind of sitcoms.
It's in the middle.
Where it was just like, we've got a problem and now we've got to solve it together, guys. Like, it's
the Scooby-Doo
none
gang.
Of that.
Yep.
It's deeply, each character's kind of deeply flawed, but charming and likable. I think the modern take on that is that we've got deeply flawed humans that you're kind of not supposed to like.
Yeah.
You know, that are kind of cruel to each other, and that's where the jokes kind of land from. Everyone's lovely and polite and pleasant and quite loving in their relationships to these people, even the rude people at the person at the bar. You know, Diane's quite rude to them up front.
Yep.
Effectively waves them away and says, I don't talk to bartenders.
Yeah.
You know, they're very polite to her and lovely, quite likable to her all the way through. I think that's just evolution of comedy. But yeah, go watch Cheers, guys. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Now, I feel like we should close the episode out with someone, you know, going off on a big long monologue and then somebody who they're addressing, you know, just answering back in German, proving they didn't understand a word that was said.
A great closing, like a really good cold and a really good, really good cold opening and a really good close. It just, that opening scene does so much for Sam more than anyone else. Mm-hmm. Before you even kind of even know his name, he knows straight away, but he kind of humors the kid and it's very funny. That cold open immediately had me laughing and I was sold 30 seconds into the show.
I loved the closing because I wasn't expecting it. I know I should have seen it a mile coming, but all the jokes were over, the show was wrapping up and Diane's off on her spiel and I was kind of starting to zone out and switch off and start looking around thinking about what I've got to do next. And then they dropped the guests are German and
I thought it was going to be like Sam's parents or something. I thought I was leaning towards, then they went to the German angle.
Brilliant. I loved it.
Absolutely. So, you know, I go and enroll in TAFE, guys. Like that's all I can say.
Give
your TAFEs a bump. Go hang out in bars. Just, you know, give back to the community.
Why not both?
Trust me, if you've been to TAFE, the bars are very essential. That's it from us. Thank you so much for listening. You can get to us on all of our normal channels. But from me, thanks very much, guys. Any last words?
You got Stand for Cheers and Netflix for Community if you want to check them out on streaming.
All right, and cheers for listening.
All right, you ready to call the outro?
Yep, Talon's here, let's go.
All right, you want to warm up or anything first?
No, I'm good.
Okay, hit me. Now remember, no cliches, funny, light, it's a podcast. Go.
In a world.
You always do this. It's the first one.
But that's
it's the most obvious
but
one.
But that's what good trails.
No, just no.
On the edge of space.
Chad, bedroom, house, podcast, us, go.
Jurassic Park meets Twilight. Imagine that.
Yeah. We're a podcast.
But
we're not a movie.
Dun, dun, dun.
We podcast. Us talking about movies.
Is it
just because, no, just go.
Is it because the T-Rex has little arms and couldn't stab him in the chest with a stake?
Go.
A rooster and a cat are friends?
Shen, I know you're a cock, but this...
It's hurtful.
Come on. Movies, podcast. It's us talking about them. Go.
Two idiots have a podcast. They talk about movies and nonsense. If you'd like to join in that conversation, you can hit them up on masspodcasters@gmail.com or talk to them on Facebook.
That's so hard?
Yeah, my voice hurts a little. I've got a tickle and I actually think Jurassic Park and Twilight as a crossover would work.
Shut up.